Okay. Ja, herzlich willkommen. Mein Name ist Volker Birk. Für die Leute, die mich nicht kennen, ich weiß nicht, ob das der Fall ist. Ich möchte heute ein bisschen was erzählen zu einem Teilprojekt, eines Projektes, was ich mache. Und das ist eben das Teilprojekt der Sync-Protokollfamilie.
Machst du in Englisch?
In Englisch? Okay, no problem. Then it's in English. Welcome, I'm Volker. And it's hopeless as usual. I want to talk about a part of a project I'm doing, which is called Pretty Easy Privacy. And the part of which I'm talking about is named PepSync. Sync is actually a protocol family of protocols for syncing between computers in a way of peer-to-peer thinking. So it's not it's not directly the cloud, it's more that the icon, the logo, will be a sun, I think, because you don't need the cloud anymore. And so it's actually a privacy project trying to avoid a cloud and deliver features which can be useful for hopefully many, many people. Actually, the project PEP is about finding a solution to solve the problems which appear usually in crypto implementations when you try to apply them for the masses. And if you have a look on the crypto implementations which are available, you will see that they either are implemented in one closed platform and you're locked in. That is, for example, implementations like WhatsApp, or it's, for example, implementations like Signal. You're locked into the platform, but it actually kind of works for many people. Or the implementations are open standards. They would be available everywhere, and nearly no one is using them because it's highly complex to use them, and most people reject that. That is standards like, for example, email encryption with PGP or with S/MIME. So basically, if I try to analyze what is already there as crypto for the masses, nearly all implementations go into one of these two buckets. And the idea of PEP is, if we can resolve that, if we can help with an open standard, with free software, and open standard means also other people may and are invited to re-implement that we have open standards for crypto which are easy to use, like you would have been in a locked-in platform, but without that special feature. And that is a tough thing to do, so we are doing that now for a couple of years. We had many problems with that, especially with financing it. And today we are in the happy situation that I can say that most of the problem, especially the financing problems, are solved. So I think we are on the safe side now and can actually work. And that is why I'm happy that I can present now what is already in the newest beta versions of the PEP implementations, which is that sync protocol family, the first version of it, which I announced, I think, on Datenspuren some 5 years ago. So it's actually coming, it's incredible, but we are late, I know, but it's coming. So if you see that lecture, or saw it, or watch it on video, the videos are still online, you will see that actually it's the same thing I'm talking about today. Just now, today, I have some implementation. So the reason for the things we're doing, I think I have tried to cover a little. There's also how we do that. And if you want to talk about solution, it's very good first to try to question the problem space. So for the problems, what we see with the open standards mainly is that there is no solution for key management. You know, key management is kind of easy if you have a closed platform, because then you have a central server at which you can ask for the key of the other guy, right? And if you don't have such a closed platform, and that's what we are trying to achieve, we are 100% peer-to-peer, there is no central infrastructure at all with PEP. So there are even no key servers. So it's a little tougher to organize that you provide the right key to the person who needs it now, right? So there's obviously key management protocols, and that's a huge thing for PEP. That is one of our main topics. It goes to the extent that we from the beginning decided not to implement own crypto at all, but just focus on those problem spaces like key management and add things there and try to use crypto implementations which are well known good as engine. And the crypto implementation we started with was GnuPG. You may have heard of that project, I guess. It's actually an OpenPGP and SMIME implementation. Most people are not aware of the second one, but actually it is. It's also delivering some X509 if you want to. And so we started with that as an engine and tried to design completely different protocols on top. So that's how we started. And then we found ourselves in the situation that we tried 3 or 4 times to talk to the GnuPG team that we could collaborate. And Werner had different ideas, so Werner and I actually understand each other, but we never found together, unfortunately. And then something very strange happened with what I did not expect to happen was that Werner's team, which is now his ex-team, showed up at my front door and was asking if they can switch to us, which is actually the ex-GnuPG team, and that which brought me into big troubles because I did not want Werner having the view that we're trying to drag his team out or something like that. But fortunately, I was Werner reacted positive. He told me that he knows of that problem and which they had internally, and he was not surprised. So, okay, so it was not too crazy. And that is a reason why actually PEP Foundation today is implementing crypto, which we never expected to, because this team, which today is the Sequoia PGP team, is implementing a PGP implementation in Rust, which is named Sequoia PGP. I don't know if you heard of that one. I can recommend to have a look on it. We are using it today now in all of our own implementations, so we are switching completely away from GnuPG for different reasons. I may provide you one reason. One reason, for example, is that the PEP engine test bench, our own core, needs on my laptop, the test bench needs around about 2.5 minutes to run through using GnuPG, and it needs around about 8.5 seconds with Sequoia. So it's a little faster, let's say. But that's not all. It has, I think it's really the ex-GnuPG team trying to do a completely different design. And in my view, it's a candidate for, let's say, next version of what you can do in PGP. And there's many, many other reasons too, not only performance, also features. But that would be a Sequoia lecture, and I would never do that because I would ask Neil Warfield or one of the other Sequoia guys to deliver that lecture, because they're way better in that, obviously, than me. So I will go back to PEP. Sorry?
In Rome, there was a talk from one of the two about that. You can watch it.
Okay. Yes, I know the talks. That is not the problem. It's, you know, Sequoia, they do that inside our foundation. That's PEP Foundation, which is hosting Sequoia. We got the co-financing for the project from the Warholand Stiftung, and the major financing and hosting is done by PEP Foundation. But that's not what I'm talking today. Today I will talk a little about PEP. And that is, PEP is basically key management, trust management a little, trying to be compatible to the trust ideas of X509 and PGP and have a mapping into that. And it's about identity management, which was more or less a result why we are doing that. We are required to do it, or we had no idea how to get the key management work. Let's say you need to think about who that other person is to select the right key, obviously. to give you some idea why PEP is dealing with identity management at all. We are clearly a privacy project. We are not a security project, to make a clear statement. So if security and privacy go together, we always decide for the two of them. If security and privacy contradict each other, we always opt for privacy. So you will see that we break some dogmas of crypto communities. For example, I cannot honor if you sign a message but don't encrypt it. I'm sorry, I'm a privacy activist. That may be even worse if you don't sign it, right? So when it's coming for privacy, if you want to have it signed and PEP is rating that, then encrypt and sign. For example, just to give you some example that you see that security and privacy is not always the same, and PEP is very clearly on the privacy side. And so that is one reason why we work on sync. We see the following problem in key management, especially in key management, but we see it at many other places, and we'll talk a little about that in that lecture. We see the problem that most people today have more than one device. I even know people having three phones. I don't know why, but they do it like this. It's also that people have a phone and a laptop like me. So most people have more than one device, and usually that's a problem if you don't have a centralized key management thing, you're not in the locked-in platform, then it's a problem that you have the keys on multiple devices, the right keys which you want to have, that you can read your messages. PEP is mainly about messages. We already are implementing it in other spaces too, because PEP is actually key management, and key management can be used at other places too, not only for messages. And with message, PEP is starting with messages like email, Jabber, text messages of all kinds. And now we were asked from guys we did not expect them coming to us if we can encrypt their messages as well, and that's what we're actually doing now. It's the SWIFT, it's an organization between banks, and they are asking us to encrypt their money, because that's actually text messages and PEP is just a clear fit. And so we are doing that, but that is a project which I never expected being asked, but it's actually happening now.
So it's still PGP, like, where you're encrypting your static key, there's none of the ratcheting going on.
I'm sorry?
There's no ratcheting going on, it's still encryption your static keys.
Yes and no. You have to know that PEP is not, PEP is like orthogonal to encryption.
Yeah, okay.
So if your encryption implementation is doing it, then it's there, otherwise it's static keys. So PEP has a backend and has functions which the backend has to fulfill, however it does it, to deliver encryption, and the PEP engine itself does not encrypt. So I cannot answer such questions for PEP, obviously. It's we take care about key management. For key management, we have different ideas. For example, we have ideas for long living keys and short living keys. That's more or less how we see it. Why ever your key is short living, right? So, and we are generating short living keys and stuff like that, or let the crypto engine generate it, and long living keys we manage differently and stuff like that. So that's more or less what we do. And however it is, in the end, you need, for example, secret keys coming to the devices you are using, however they are generated, however they are connected. And that is the first thing what that sync protocol family does. Sync is a protocol family which has the basic idea that I have one user, and the user has multiple devices, let's say 2, 3, 4, I don't know. And the idea is now, can we synchronize data peer-to-peer between the devices over the messaging channels they already have? So PEP is always tunneling. And if we have that, then we can synchronize whatever is required to be synchronized between these devices to make the appearance to the user like it behaves as one system, right? And that is the basic idea of the sync protocol. And sync is then a stack of network protocols where we think about things like, okay, first I want to have secure channels to synchronize data which is private. And if I want to have secure channels, then first I need to implement key management, because then the right keys must be at the right places, or you cannot encrypt, or you cannot organize at least some privacy. Then I need to organize some trust. So it's clear that I exclude the man in the middle case, and when I have that, then I have secure channels, and on top of that, I can implement more, let's say, more protocols to synchronize different types of data. That is basically the idea. PEP is always, if ever possible, a plugin into an existing messaging system. So we organize the interfaces that we are not the messengers. We more or less support different messaging systems or different messaging applications. And of course, as usual, we are ending up with writing apps for Android and iOS. Why? Because the data kraken and its Apple friend decided that you must not have plugin concepts in their apps, or they have their rules, right? So we end up writing apps, and this led us even to the, for me, very strange situations that we wrote a full-featured MUA for iOS, because I have no other choice. I never expected that to happen, but actually I think we have now a release candidate, and we are in releasing process. If you download it, by the way, all software, what PEP does, is free software under a GNU license. And we have a multi-license strategy. So if you root an iPhone and download the PEP client, it's legal and supported. If you don't root it, then I'm sorry, you need to buy it in App Store. And it's basically the idea, which gives us a business model, but it's your own fault, root your iPhone. And so it's just supporting the both ways. And because we have a license concept, which is at least dual license, sometimes even multi-license, it's always possible. So we have a compliant EULA, which Apple made their stamp on top of it. And additionally, as an alternative, you can have the same thing downloading from the internet as GPL. So it's your choice. That's our idea. Okay, and so I'm talking now about a part of it that was nearly a PEP talk, I know. I'm trying to keep people in who don't know PEP yet. Sorry for that. So I'm talking now about the protocol implementation, and I decided not to have slides. The reason is I'm closely working together with people from the other side of this society, which is the capitalists. And for example, we have a partner now, which is PricewaterhouseCoopers. And there, I have no other choice to always talk using slides, because it's their culture, and you have to adapt. And I was thinking, in a CCC talk, I think I can organize that. I just show it as it should be, right? So if you don't mind, I intentionally skipped the slides. I have plenty of slides, I can put some, but I will try to avoid them here, okay? So because I hope that the audience will like it this way, perhaps. Okay, so that's the reason why you don't see slides, but I have graphics here if you want to, because that's actually what I will talk about. It's today PEPSync, that's the state machine. And I will try to explain you what's going on and why we do it like this and so forth. And because that looks a little complex, there is a good message here, because PEPSync is also here. And there is something, oh, I don't know if you can read that, so. No. What was it said? I forgot it, I'm sorry.
It's okay, you have the right for first.
Sorry?
It's called call this the name.
Yeah, no.
Let's call yeah.
I don't know if I find is that better or
blue screen.
Solar.
Can you read that?
Yeah. Is there a solar?
Solar.
Solar?
No. I have shine.
Ooh.
No. Okay, let me see. I have no idea. Is that readable? Okay, then we use that one. So I will deliver two lectures here. The second lecture is how the fuck is that working? Because what we actually do is we are specialized in software generation. That means you write the protocol in a DSL type make and you have an implementation of it. So the magic obviously is in the generators, okay? And that will be the second part, like the second lecture I will try to deliver is how the hell is that working? How can you do that? And the DSL toolchain is, I had a lecture here at this event, I think 2 or 3 years ago, where I was explaining the toolchain. So if you want to watch the video about how the toolchain works, it's already there. It was at some Cosin event. And so I will not talk too much about it, just give you some ideas. So this is actually a DSL implementing a usual way to describe network protocols, which is actually a FSM, right? A finite state machine. So for the people who are not aware of that, there's different ideas for finite state machine. It's not only one idea. And so I explain shortly the idea of finite state machine, the Berry way, which I'm working with here, so you can understand, or perhaps better understand, or faster understand what I'm talking about. What we are doing here is we have a state machine with a following paradigm. Obviously, we have states. Then we have conditions. Then we have transitions, then we have actions being executed, and we are in an event-based system, so we have events, and because this is a network implementation, the state machines not only receive events, they also send network messages, and receiving a network message is also an event. So basically, there is two types of events. One type is I received this network message, and the second type is I received some other event. And that is how things come together, and that way we try to describe our protocol. And when we have that protocol, we try to describe that, for example, two devices automatically find each other, announced to the user, we could form a device group. That's a basic idea of PEP. My laptop and my phone could form a device group, and then they synchronize their data between each other. And to do that, there is a small list of ideas which I want to present just if you don't mind at the source code. As you may have seen, I did that already. There's when you download the source code, we have that source code, of course, we have it online. So it's here if I would have internet, yes. If not, it's not online, then I am offline. Okay, forget it. Not now.
I can give you a hotspot.
Yes, it will work probably, and probably it will, or most probably will not work. Okay, I don't care, I don't need it. Forget it.
We can all use Git.
Yes, sure. Yes, that's why it's Mercurial. No problem. Okay. There's a makefile in, if you make keysync SVG, you will see actually we'll see actually that we have some generator which draws this sweet picture here. which is of course Graphis based. You may know Graphis, it's a tool where, well, the generator, when you generate things, that's really nice, because the generator to draw that picture is actually not too big as well, right? It has, I think, what is it? 31 lines of code, including the empty last line. So that thing draws the picture. Oh, now I see the problem here. How could I switch color off? Does anyone know that? I forgot all of that. I never do it. Probably, I know how I do it.
Syntax off works.
Ah, syntax off. Yes, you're right. Okay, so. So we can read it. And you see, what I have as a tool chain is a template language, which is just spitting out source code. Just to give you an impression, but I will close that now and go back to the real thing. So, thank you. Okay, and try to give you an impression what we're doing here, okay? So, the first thing, what I want to do is, I have a phone and I have a laptop, and the first thing is, I want to make them find each other. Because I'm doing that for users which are absolutely non-hackers. Usually, people specialized on PGP either love or hate PEP. We'll see basically two groups. There is also PEP haters, and that's okay, because they get into troubles with PEP, because after that you don't need their consulting anymore. And this is really, if you read, for example, the newest IX, you will find an article where a PGP expert bashes PEP. And it's one from German intelligence service named BSE, by the way. And that's also not by accident. So that is intended. And you will see that the guy has no arguments to bash it, because he's finding, in the summary, he's finding two arguments against PEP. You can read it in the newest IX, and you see it yourself. First argument, well, people knowing what they're doing could be feeling bad about PEP because it's doing it itself. Second argument, because he only tested Enigma, which is not from us. We don't do Enigma, the Enigma project is doing Enigma. They asked us if they can have PEP functionality. We provided a distribution of PEP and they put it into Enigma. That's the Enigma project. So the only thing he tested is Enigma. And he's telling us, for new users, the menu is too complex. By the way, you can read it in the newest IX, not kidding. It's really funny, because the normal Enigma menu has, I think, 20 lines, 20 menu entries. If you're in PEP mode, it has 3. So, but that's his argument. You can read it on 4 pages in the newest IX. Have fun with that article. We decided not to comment on it, because when it's getting too stupid, we stop with that.
Maybe
right?
Confused the normal menu with the Enigma menu.
I will not comment on that. That's an opinion. I'm fine with that. I don't share that opinion, obviously. But let's see. So we're doing here different things. So my users are the users, when it works, they forget that it's here, right? That's my users. If it does not work, they pick up the phone to call someone who understands. That's my users. I'm sorry, no one in this room probably is in my target group. I'm not doing it for me. I'm not doing it for you guys, I'm so sorry. I'm doing it for that small group of 7.5 billion people who don't have our knowledge. Okay? So that's my target group. So if you feel insecure having something which manages your keys, guys, there's good software already there where you can do it yourself. And please don't use PEP, okay? If you want that. If you're lazy as me, or unaware of the problems how to handle keys, like those small group of 7.5 billion, then you may use PEP, okay? And I will not put features into it where you can do it manually. because then it's the wrong software for you. Okay, just to make a clear statement in the beginning, because I had that discussion so often now. So the target is here. I have a user having a laptop and a phone, let's say in the first example, and the user is wants to experience the following. He's configuring this thing, let's say, for his email account. We all still use email, even if you use WhatsApp for everything. Why? Because you need email to buy things in the internet, right? So everyone still is using email, just for that discussion. So you may just configure whatever you use for email. Let's say you use Gmail in a webmailer, or you're in a company and use Microsoft Outlook, right? That's what people do, I think. You may dislike that, but actually it's a fact, right? People do such things. Or you have some phone here and use it on your phone. And now the first step would be, can we make it appearing like this? I have already a laptop, I buy a new phone and configure my email account, and then that beast says to me, well, I found also a second device, we could form a device group and synchronize our data, do you want that? And then deliver a possibility to check if that is secure or if there is a man in the middle, right? And PEP already has a method which we prefer to check if there is something man in the middle, or if you can compare two types of things, and if they're identical, then there's probably no man in the middle. And now it's not fingerprints. Well, actually, technically it is. But why it's not fingerprints? Well, to be honest about fingerprints, I see in the wild, in reality, I see two types of fingerprints checking. First types, they don't do it. That's the most common one. That's the most common implementation of fingerprint checking. Second type of fingerprint checking, people check 32 bits because then they are secure. Because 32 bits is obviously enough to exclude collisions, right? We all know that's not true, but that's what everyone does. How do they do it? Well, can we just check the first group and the last group of the key? Ever heard of that? That's actually, you know, a group is 16 bits, so two groups obviously is 32 bits, though that's the assumption, right? So, let's say, because I'm a little pessimistic about real-world implementations of actual fingerprint checks, we try to find something which is better than that, okay? Maybe it's not as good as do a real fingerprint check with a full fingerprint, which really should be done, but no one does it. Okay, some nerds in their party, they organize for that. With that exception, nearly no one does it. So we had the idea to map that hex codes to words of your mother's tongue. But that is, unfortunately, not what I will talk about today, because it's in the other lecture already, which I delivered about how PEP, what are the PEP concepts. So we are already in sync, but you will find that again, when we show a dialogue where you can accept that this should form a group, you will see the trust words again, right? And the trust words deliver enough bits that you're more secure than what I was explaining for sure.
There's a random off topic. At some point somebody came up with a scheme for doing what they call key poems, which is essentially the same thing, but they make it rhyme.
It's more. It's okay. It's okay. Technically, it's more like PGP word list. Just that PGP word list, in my view, is a misdesign, and we're just doing it the other way around. But I cannot talk too much about it. I cannot talk about sync anymore because that is part of the PEP lecture. I'm just mentioning that there is something like a list of 5 up to 10 words. Which you see, and if you compare it on the two devices, that's actually calculated out of dictionary using the FPL. Okay, so how can we do that? How can we make these two devices find each other? First question, do we have a communication channel which will work for sure? Right? Because that's two devices, and if they cannot communicate in any way, then we are doomed already, right? And again, PEP is not based on infrastructure we provide. There may be infrastructure in the what we call transports, that is, for example, for email, obviously there's probably some MTAs on the line, right? Or email will not work, I guess. But this is not our infrastructure. We expect that some transport is being used, for example, email, and if that is the case, then we base all everything on that infrastructure and don't deliver own infrastructure, and what we do is, in our layer, it's peer-to-peer, okay? And yes, of course we want NuNet, obviously. And the reason should be clear why. Okay, so what we're doing is, we're deciding if a device was already grouped or not and have different states for it. So just to comment on that, the PEP protocols are all modeled in state machines, but there's two different implementations of it. One is the hard-coded one, which is just storing the state in the database, and you have the transitions as API to the app. And the second one is like this. This will be a state machine which will run on a thread, most probably. We also have the possibility for a single-threaded implementation with all other things together, but most probably it will run on an extra thread, and it will be the data will be only volatile or transient. It will not be persistent, right? So the first thing which I do is when I start the state machine is if I'm already grouped, member of such a group or not. And if I'm not, I'm so. And what we're doing here is we have the following concept. We have a message which is called beacon. Well, yes, that does not sound like a PEP invention, and you're right. Probably not. But where do we send to? The basic idea of PEP is that whatever messaging system you use, in my example, email, you have any type of inbox. Because you need something where the messages come out, right, as a user. And so what we're actually doing is we're sending these messages to ourselves as messages of the underlying transport. And that means we generate the email, encode our stuff in, and send it to our own email address. Why are we doing that? Sounds pretty useless. Who is sending emails to himself? Well, maybe if you're mind sick or something, or you're alone and have no other people to talk to. No, there's another option. You have two devices configured on at least one common email address, which is usually the one you buy things on the internet, by the way. That's what you have. Check it at home. What you have on your different devices. And so I can send an email to a place where all devices can read it, right? Which is your own inbox. And that gave the idea, so we are using the inbox of the transport actually as our as our message bus, right? So PEP is actually tunneling through the underlying message protocol of the transport, in this case email, and PEP sync itself is encoded in ASN1. And of course we heard it from the IETF, they dislike ASN1 because it's from the ISO, everything which is from the ISO is bad, because it's not from the IETF, obviously. I don't give a shit on that, and yes, you can have it on video, because there's a reason for that decision, and I still think for our case that may be so true for many, many other implementations. For our problem, I think it's a good choice, and that's what I wanted to show you why. What we do is, it should be here, no, not here, oops, then it should be here. If it's small or big letter, it's not random or arbitrary with ASN1, they decide in the standard where you have to have a big array there. It's even worse than Java, yes. So, what we generate is, we generate an ASN1 grammar. That's an ASN1 grammar here, which is reflecting what does need to be encoded in that message following that implementation. And so you see, and that will be part of my next lecture, it's quite a multi-level generation thing, right? So for example, out of the DSL we generate ASIN1, out of ASIN1 we generate an ASIN1 codec. Using an codec of ASIN1 to encode, which they do. Yes, it's double. Yes, if you decided for ASIN1, it's not already clear which binary codec it will be, because then ASIN1 has the concept that there is a list of possibilities, and what we are using is PER, packed encoding rules of ASIN1. And that gives small, very small binary files. And the protocol is designed that those binary files, if you push them through Base64, all of them, for all common cases, will fit into an SMS. That gave the limit. Of course, there's cases where we need to split them on more than one SMS, but PET is not email, you know? PET is designed for arbitrary message transport, so the design obviously needs to reflect that. And so this stuff here is being generated then, this ASIN1 grammar, and we generate that out of that state machine, and that is why I'm showing that one first. And so what we're doing here, we decided for a beacon, and the beacon is defined here. That's the beacon definition. And what we actually do is, we decided for having a challenge. The challenge is a transaction ID, and the transaction ID with PET is defined as a UUID type 4. For the people who may be unaware of what that is, it's a long random string.
Not long.
Okay.
Not long enough.
Sorry?
Not long enough.
Not what enough?
Not long enough.
Not long enough.
There's not entropy in there. What do you want?
Yeah, it's not the fun.
Okay. If you find it's not long enough, well, I don't think many people share your opinion, because it's quite long. Okay, so that's a challenge. Well, wasn't it 128 bits?
Yeah, I mean, normal hashes goes to like hard count nowadays.
And you know, type 4 is completely random? There's different UUIDs, you know that? There's types, okay. So that is a 128-bit random. Okay, why are we doing that? Because we have the idea, we have a special type of message bus here. Our message bus is world writable, but can be read only by the right user, by definition. Why is it world writable? How can you write other people's inboxes? I have a hint for you, send an email, right? It will end up in the inbox, so you can write every inbox on planet. So the idea is, because that is the case, for reasons about don't tamper with me too much, don't make it too easy to tamper with it, we do the following. We only work with people who can read the beacon. Because everyone can write one, but can you read it? If you can read it and answer with the right challenge, then you may be a respected partner, otherwise for sure not. And that is a result of that special situation that yes, that we have a message bus which is both writable but only readable by one user, right? That's how it's defined. If the security will work, that's another topic. Okay, so that is why we have that channel challenge. And in the next message, it's needed to answer with a copy of that challenge or you're not accepted. You're frankly ignored. Your beacon will be ignored. Or your answer will be ignored, to be correct. Okay, so what we do here, I go back to the top, go back to the state soul, where we were. So what we do is, I will not comment on all of them, but what we will do is, we calculate new random numbers and use them from there. And then we send beacons. Initially, already we send a beacon. We also send beacons in case, for example, a new short-living key was being generated, so we send a beacon. We only do that if we are solo, by the way. If you're a group, we don't send beacons. And that is like a safeguard here. And what we're doing then is, when we receive a beacon, in case we get the event beacon received, then if it's the same challenge which we use, probably it was our own beacon, because that's the next problem of my special message bus, well, I get my own messages in copy, right? And I should skip them. It's not a good idea to react on my own beacons, because I will stay soul even if I group, I think, right? So we should avoid that one.
What do you do if the user is using cache memories POP3? What do you do if the user is using cache memories POP3?
Not supported.
Oh, sorry.
We will not support POP3. Don't forget, Christian, I only have those small people's group, only the 7.5 billion, right? Not all the major group, which is important.
Some
okay. And nearly no one of them even heard of POP3, but they all know Gmail. Okay, that's the reality we are in, right? I don't say I like that reality. I'm not a big fan of the data breaking, to be honest. It would be a surprise if a privacy activist would be, wouldn't it? Okay, but that's actually the case. So I don't give a shit on POP3. But I need to carefully think about Gmail. That's my job. I'm sorry for that. It's really bad, but it's actually the case. Okay, so that's what we do. And then I want to have some handshaking that the two devices find each other. I opted for a classical three-way handshake. But a classical three-way handshake has a small disadvantage here, because it's asynchronous and it's asymmetric, right? Asynchronous is okay, asymmetric is a problem, because actually if you have two soul devices for the beginning trying to find each other, it's absolutely symmetric, right? So the very first decision which is to make is, can we decide for roles? It's not so important which side takes which role, but two different ones, please, right? And it would be nice if each side knows if they don't take the same side, right? So this is the same role. And that is why we have roles. We call the two roles requester and offerer, because PepSync is based on a distributed transaction model. So many of the names you will find here are out of the namespace, let's say, of distributed transactions. So what I do here is, someone is requesting a distributed transaction, and someone then is agreeing on that and offering the transaction number, and the other one takes it. And if that is with a three-way handshake, then it's actually the transaction is open, and then the transaction can be closed by commit yes and commit no, or commit accept and commit reject, which is exactly the same. I don't know if anyone here in the room is aware of distributed transactions. That's how you do distributed transactions. Either you commit them with accept or with reject, or you roll them back because cancel, right? And that is the way, the words you will find in the PepSync protocol, because actually we are now already into the topic of having a distributed transaction. And my transaction makes it secure that the two devices find each other and the user check the trust words and says it's okay to have it. And I want to have that in a transaction, right? So avoiding, let's say, attacks like with race conditions, timing and stuff like that. That's why I want to have it in the form of a distributed transaction. So that gave the names. How do they decide who takes the offerer role, the other the requester role? How do they decide that? Well, both have a challenge, and it's really trivial. I check which challenge is smaller than the other. They're both random, and that's on both sides available, right? And so the smaller one will be requester, the bigger one will be offerer for no reason, because it doesn't matter. So that's what we do. And what we do is, if we are the requester, if we are offerer, we don't send the request, obviously, but we send another beacon. Why? That's another race condition. If you design network protocols, race condition is always there. It's a race condition because we may have read a beacon and answered that, but the beacon may be just right before expiry. And then the other is not there anymore. And we shouldn't leave our state or we are locked in, right? And you have such things, I will not go into too many details without a beer, but because we have such situations, somehow you send one beacon more, right? To be sure that the other side is there and will react on it. It's not just the race condition that you react, but they are already out. Okay, and your old beacon already disappeared, right? And if we are a requester, we open the negotiation, and then there's something special. This here is an action which is following a convention in the implementation of sync, which I have to comment on. Sync is using an input-output buffer, and the input-output buffer is being used when a message comes in, there's the data. And if you modify the data and send out, then the parts of the in-out buffer, it's like the superset of all fields, those parts are being used to send out the message. So it's very easy to copy, which is basically do nothing, right? And it's not so easy, if it's not a copy, then you write in what will change here. And this action, I will show how the implementation works in next lecture, as I announced. So now I will set the bit that this is not a group, because we already know that we are not the group, but the other side cannot know, because we accept their beacon, and groups are accepting beacons, but they never send. So what we do is, we make it sure that the other side gets informed that they are negotiating with another sole device. Now we are already asymmetric, and because of that, we can do it only in one row. And, well, yes, then we send out the request. Send means we send actually a network message. And all network messages are in the same DSL, they are just at the end. Moment here. So that is a negotiation request. The transaction to establish the trust is called negotiation. That's how we called it. So that's now we are in the transaction. Well, repeat the challenge or we ignore you. Yes, some versioning because it may be two PEP clients with different versions, right? Then we fall back to old protocol and stuff like that. And then we have another transaction ID, which is the ID of the negotiation. And yes, transactions should have and must have transaction IDs. And I think my friend Christian here in the room, can you tell an example? If you don't have it, how doomed you are, right? He just told me. But so that is why we want to have it, okay? And the negotiation is derivated from the two challenges by XOR. Why? Well, I have a special case here. Again, my message bus has special properties. I get a copy of all what I send in. Everyone reads every message. It's like broadcast, in a way. And it's world writable. So I have really special things to think about. And I have totally, let's say, I have devices which I have a user, when the user decides, oh no, that's enough, I switch it off, right? Then it will happen. I need to deal with that situation. It's not possible, I have nothing reliable here, right? It's really not a good situation if you design a network protocol, if you're in the situation we are in now. That's usually not what you hope for. I don't think a common TCP implementation even is, well, then the socket will time out, right? If you just shut down one box. And to avoid too many timeouts, because actually I have a user here in, I need to avoid all timeouts I can, right? And if I have no idea, it will be a timeout. but I have a user herein, so I do the full handshake while one state. Because only if I have one state, I will probably not timeout, right? Because timeouting means you're in a state which you can only leave with one message, the message never arrives, and then you timeout back to the to a root state, let's say, right? And I do the full handshake in the root state. And I cannot just switch states, or I will have the timeout problem because my user will be disappointed when he clicks around and it does not work anymore and he throws it away, right? And PEP is bullshit. I tend to agree to the PGP guys and stuff like that, right? Okay, that should not happen. So actually, in states, so many, many things are happening. So not only init and keychain and cannot decrypt, and not only what if a beacon arrives, also what if a negotiation request arrives. In normal network protocols, it's the next state, right? Waiting for the request now. Or even the answer is here. The answer is here because I don't want to leave the state until the transaction is done, right? And so it's like a transaction, and so there's some crazy things in that design, let's say, which you usually don't find in other network protocols, but just another state. Okay, so when we are requester, obviously we sent out the request, that gave the name, by the way, surprise, surprise. And if you're on the other side, then you receive the request. And if you receive the request, you do the same. If it was me, ignore. Why is that in? Well, because it's one state, right? So there's one if more. And then store it and send the acceptance, which is negotiation open, transaction opened, which means, well, yes, I have it, and I accepted the transaction ID, and now we're on the same page, right? And when you receive that, then we can start with the real thing. And that is what we actually do then. We go handshaking, and that is where the protocol gets being split, because it's a little different to handshake with a group than it's handshaking between two sole devices. Okay. And that's the last thing, still in the same state. You may be the requester, and now you get the handshake open, and that means you're sure the other got the message and they accepted the transaction ID, so we are on the same page, so we have that thing, and we can just switch states. And that is where we actually leave the states, right? Not before. And that, if you compare it to other network protocols, that's fairly uncommon. Usually you just leave when accepting some message, right? But that's why. Okay. Still our user sees nothing. It's just on the line, right? Why does he see nothing? Well, because if it's a PEP client, there's emails PEP does not show, or you switch on the option. Obviously, we need something like that, because now we're generating emails, sending them to ourselves, having binary sync attachments, right? That's how it works. And so users could get confused. Wow, I have now three emails. Well, beacon, oh, maybe four, another beacon, a handshake request, and maybe a open, so it's already four, right? In my inbox, four emails appear, what is that? And usually the emails are marked in different ways, also in the header, so it's easy to filter them out and then show them to normal users. If you have a look on it, which is still supported, because PEP formats are backwards compatible to PGP, so if one of your devices is a PGP device, which will probably not take a share in the sync protocol, unfortunately, or we publish that, we try to make it a standard, we invite PGP implementations to support it, by the way. So they can join in, but then they need to find an own solution how to hide the technical messages, let's say. And that is why those messages contain subjects and texts in the body, like, this is an automatically generated message by PEP, you can safely ignore or even delete it. And it will disappear itself if you don't delete it, which will be the case, because the PEP implementations, when these things expire, they take it from the inbox. Why inbox, why not the subfolder? Well, we discussed the subfolder lately, and it has a big disadvantage, which is called GMX. You may have heard of that one. Ever heard of GMX? It's not so common in Switzerland, I think, but more common in Germany. We were told that if you have the free version of GMX, your contract may only offer 10 folders. And so that would require, if you want to sync your devices, that you actually buy an upgrade. And so,
may I have a radical question?
Yes.
Why don't you use the trash folder?
That was also a discussion, but the problem is, in some implementation, trash is in the network, in others not. And it's even worse, for both things you find people with strong opinions. So, you know, what you're actually trying to do when you try to serve common users, you try, if there is even a field where there's strong opinions, your first question is, can we avoid it? Okay? I need the trash folder in the net because I'm exchanging my data through it. What? What are you doing? Well, I throw what I need on my laptop, I throw into the trash, and then I take it out on my laptop. Not kidding. And that's only one of the servers. So that's, for example, someone who will opt, obviously, I think, for having trash on the net. Guess what some crypto guys say if you have your trash folder on the net? They will recommend at least to encrypt it, right? So people start to encrypt their trash. Okay, I will stop here. Let's say it's difficult. So we still are in the inbox. That's the result of the discussion. Let's see where that will lead us to. And now we have, by the way, the problem that inbox is complicated for Microsoft Outlook. You may have heard of Microsoft Outlook. It's like a bundled implementation of race conditions, right? I think the compiler is derivated from C++. It's not really C++, but it's somehow kind of C++. And people are implementing Outlook dislike C++. I will not say more. At least they never had a clear look on it, but that's another topic. Okay, so for example, Outlook has problems like inbox is something which is not reliable, and it's something which of course is full of race conditions, because everything is a race condition in Outlook. There's no exception, I think. I did not find any. For example, in Outlook, when you send 3 emails to Outlook, then they may just change their sequence they are coming in. So we tested that. You have an Exchange server, and you have Outlook, and send a message to yourself. And you do that 3 times, and they may appear in a different sequence. May. It's not must. Okay? And things like that. So, okay, that's another story. So to implement that in practice, that's not enough. Obviously, our Outlook developers have much fun. It's really a nice thing to develop for Microsoft Outlook. I still did not deliver that lecture. I could still offer it, which is the worst of Outlook and Exchange, if you're interested. Then. So, yes, you need probably rubber boots until here, right? Depending on how deep we dive in. Okay, so what you're actually doing here is, now we are handshaking, transaction is open, we are handshaking, and so now we inform the user, right? And we inform the user by showing the trustworthy dialog, and now there's different types of trustworthy dialogs, like I found another device, shall we form a device group, or I found that you already have a group of devices, shall we join, right? So there's options here. So we show the matching handshake dialog, and then we have different options. We are in a network, So I have my own user pressing cancel, or the same user, probably, hopefully, or the attacker, same user pressing cancel, but on the other device, right? So it's different if my user presses cancel where my state machine runs, where I am, or if they press cancel on the other device, right? So I need to deal with both cases. In a group, it's a little more complex, because in a group, they may press cancel on any device. But if they do it on a group device, it has another meaning than if they do it on the still soul device, right? Because what they press on any group device is responsible for the full group, while what they press on the soul device is only for this one, right? So you see the asymmetric case and the symmetric case, and we are now still in the case that we have two devices, and two devices try to find each other and form a group, okay? We're not more. So if my user presses cancel, I get a cancel event. Again, these are events. Receiving a message is an event, but there is more than these events, right? For example, pressing cancel on the trustworthy dialog is also an event. It's not a network message if it's the local one, but it's an event. And you see why I opted for that design here, so I can handle them the same way, right? So either I get a cancel, then I send out a rollback, because cancel usually means not now. And if I get a rollback and it's valid, it's from my partner, then I also cancel, right? That is the case that my partner got a cancel click and sent the rollback. And then I roll back the transaction and go back to soul and do nothing else, right? And so if my
If you go back to soul, you run the init of soul again, which means you send out a beacon?
Yes.
Which means the dialog pops up again, do you want to sync with the other device?
No.
Why not?
Yes. Okay. Because of timing. It will come again, I think, in 60 seconds.
Oh, okay, so I'm just getting every 60 seconds.
Yes.
Oh, and user experience.
Yes, you have another choice than cancel. Cancel means not now, but maybe later. Not now, I need to go back to contacts and find something. There is a way to reject it, and that disables it. So you also have a reject button, and the reject button has two functions. Where were we? Let me see on the negotiation request. I think we were here. No, I lost it. Here we were, I think. Yes. Just when we were at the other one, right? We were here, I think. Yes. So. We may get a reject. Reject means disable it. It also means, the trustworths don't match. Reject means no. And we decided to switch it off until you switch it on again. So it's more or less coming close to what people expect from such buttons, I think. We are not sure yet, okay? And it's also dependent on what you write as text on the buttons and which color you gave them. But we have like reject and disable sync, because I take my new device in, the dialogs come, and I say, no, I don't want to connect the two, and I want to say that with one button, and then shut up, right? Or, as I said, I have someone at the phone, the dialogs comes, and I say, cancel, not now, and go in the phone and enter some things, and then I expect the thing coming again, right? So that is basically how we decided. I'm not sure about that UI design, because we're not in the UI testing yet, we are just right before release now. So let's see if that survives. Reject, obviously, on the line would be a commit reject. It's the transaction being committed, and the result is, no, switch it off, right?
Is it switch off for that other device, or is it switch off global for all other devices?
Well, this is the case I have two soul devices.
Yeah, but if I now later come as a third device, do I have to enable one of those two devices, Or will it go, oh, it's a different device you're trying to switch, so therefore I should...
No, if you switch it off, it's off. We also discussed that one, but then you're in the typical, let's say you're locked in, because you only can do it wrong for one or the other user. So you need to, because expectations really go split here, so we opted for the case that if you switch it off, it's off and stays off, and if you cancel it, it's you move the problem to later. That's what we do. Let's see if that survives. Okay, so then we send the commit reject, obviously, on the line. Close the transaction, transaction over, the answer is no, we don't do anything. And stop it. If we get a commit reject on the line and it's from the right partner, then we accept that and switch it off. If we get an accept, that means form a group between the two, then this was combined with the trustwords, right? The user sees the trustwords dialogs. So that means trust the key. I call it this key. Why? Because the key is mentioned already in my input buffer, because the message arrived and was copied into the input buffer. So I can here trivially say trust this key, which is in the input buffer, because I'm reacting exactly on that message, right? Yes, and that will be a commit accept, of course, on the line. And then you have like a mesh of such options. Maybe on this device, accept is being pressed first, and on the other device later. Then I will send my message first, and the other will send it back later. Or it will be just other way around, because it's one user, right? So probably the user will not find an identical time where she or he will press that button, right? So probably the user will press it here, and press it here, and then will expect that it works, right?
You don't know the users.
Well, they always expect that it works. I think that's a safe bet.
Just make sure you handle the ways they have that
imposed. Yes, so what we do here, that gives this mesh here. You know, this is really the different states for I get first this, and afterwards this, or the other way around, and here you have really states in your state machine, right? For the different possibilities and combinations. And because that exactly matches the phases of a two-phase commit, I called them phase one and phase two, the states. That's again, the wording is coming from distributed transactions, okay? And we're still in such a transaction, I think it's fair to call them phase one and phase two, because that's exactly what is meant in a two-phase commit with phase one and phase two.
May I ask a question briefly about the end states, since we already were at that topic before?
Well, there's no really end state without, with the exception of disabled, there's more like stable state, like sole and grouped.
Yeah, but the disabled state, end state. So suppose I
hit
the reject button, and I end up in the end state.
Yeah.
How do I get out of that?
Well, you switch it on again in the options.
Yes, but the question is, can I switch on one device and the other device is also turn it back on?
No.
Or do I have to turn
no, not supported.
Because you could have a message where I basically say, I was turned on again, and the other devices make a challenge, are you really on the same inbox? You know, and then they also turn themselves on again.
You know, the inbox alone is not safe.
No, but if I can prove to you that I can read the same inbox you are writing to...
Well, be careful. Okay, for the security model, because that's your question basically based on, I think. For the security model, if you want me sending you my private keys, you need to know more than the password of my inbox.
Oh, no, I don't know.
Because if I...
I just want to re-enable the serving part.
Yes.
So what I want to do is... We're both in the end state.
Yes.
My user says re-enable soon.
Next thing is, if you want to annoy my user, you need to have more too.
More than access to his inbox?
Yes.
I think if I put in your access to your inbox, and read and delete messages there, I can annoy you so much the rest doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, the reason for my product is that we provide measures and implementation that this changes.
Yeah, but right. If the maximum annoyance I can do is pop up this one dialogue, that's not, you know...
you cannot pop up my dialog. Okay, that's a decision. I could do what you're suggesting. Let's see if my concept survives the user interface test, okay? We will try it out now, also with friends and family and then with customers. And let's see if that survives or if I implement something like you're suggesting. I needed to do a couple of decisions and I have no experience, so what I do is I try to make a good guess. And my guess is if my user says, shut up, I shut up. Yes, you're surprised because that's not me, right? But okay. That's just a decision. We could discuss that and you're right, there's other options. Okay. So that is the reason why you find that crazy mesh part here, right? For phase one and two, the different combinations. So I will not go into details here, we will just waste time because the same thing, but you attach the other way around, right? Okay. And of course, we have the same thing from the side of the offerer. And they are symmetric again, because they got asymmetric by intention for doing the three-way handshake, and now they are in a distributed transaction between two devices without defined roles, and that means they are symmetric again. So it's like a copy. Why the hell do we have extra states? Can't we reduce them now to one state? No, we cannot. Why not? Because my inbox has that special type of thing, of property, that I get my own messages, right? So I need different states and I need to differ between if it's coming from the other or it was coming from me, right? So I have extra states to handle that, and that is why it's a copy. Basically for some devices, now it's like a reflected copy, like a mirrored copy of it. So you have exactly the same shit. And if you have a look at the state machine, it's expressing that here, right? And you end up in grouped, obviously. If you accept the trust, I'm just scrolling through all that different states, which are just implementing the different combinations of sequences, how that shit could arrive in mirrored copies, then it ends up with forming the group, right? And forming the group already had trust this key, you may remember that. And so there's two checks. One is if that is a trusted channel, but that's not enough. Because you may have a trusted channel to external communication partners, right? As well. So additionally, if it's exactly the same partner I'm talking to all the time. So you like start by enabling, by establishing the trust, you pin down who that is, you have the trust for sync, not for all other cases, and then it's the trusted channel with the correct partner. And that is how we check it. And for such checks, sync has always double checks. So we check it always on the incoming side, and we check it with an, if possible, different algorithm on the outgoing side. And that is just, hopefully, if we have a bug on one, you know, we are about exchanging secret keys, right? So we try to make it safe. So as a safeguard, all checks are doubled at different places of codes with, if ever possible, different checks. And not only asserts, because they are compiled out with the release, right? So that's what we do. I don't know if we have the time for the implementation here, but if not, I will put it in the next. And then, if that is all the case, then we accept keys and send out keys. And we do that by separating, sending which keys will it be, and sending the actual keys. And we expect the message transport implementation to send the key data. And there's a reason for that, because PEP is orthogonal to transport and crypto implementation. So there must be already some implementation of crypto and transport, however they do it. and we're asking them to attach the secret keys, and this is the list which they need to attach, and that is the list which we announce, because KeySync, that's the part of KeySync here, is also about that those keys get trusted as own keys, right? So it's also about trust, and you must not do that without explicitly sending over safe channel to the right receiver which keys that receiver can trust now, right? Whatever they get from the transport as key data, they must even ignore that if it's not announced on the safe channel that this is now really the thing. So it's like sending the key data needs already a safe channel, and sending the information, if these are the keys which have to be trusted, needs an extra safe channel. That's again double checking, right? So if you manage to tamper with the keys, at least you don't get them as own keys. If you can crack, for example, into the crypto implementation of the transport. So this is just double checking. There's no real meaning with it. It's just we wanted to have at all places, in all cases, double checking. Because it's about secret keys, we don't trust ourselves a little, right? So if things are going wrong, they, hopefully we can reduce the damage, right? And that's what we do. And that is then things like, then of course you can show that the group was creating a group, right? And then it's about which one will be the group keys. Well, all of them, obviously. You don't need, I should mention that, we have the extra problem that you may have configured email account A, B, and C on the phone, while you have email account A, D, and E on the laptop, right? That's possible and common. So which keys get be exchanged? All of them. Because what must not happen to the user is, and that's packed now, when they click on some, on any email, it needs to be shown in clear text, right? So we exchange all of those keys with the exception, and that is now possible, you can configure a PEP client. These are keys which I never share with Sync. These keys are not being synced. So you can configure, and you can configure that per account. So you can say, this is an email account I don't want to be included in Sync. And if you disable that, there's the guarantee with double checking again, filtering them out, even if they were not in, that keys for this email account will never appear in sync. So that's a defined feature which is needed here, because I think, for example, if I have a private email account and the laptop is from the company, probably I don't want to sync that one, right? Probably not. And that is a feature which we have. Because our user group is users, if they do that one wrong but then start to encrypt, it's still way better if they don't. I'm so sorry, I'm a privacy activist, I should repeat that. If we shut down mass surveillance by doing that in many, many places and people fuck up their security, it's better. So it's better than highly secure and the surveillance works. It's just our decision, right? So what we do is we share private keys for all accounts which you don't click off, you don't want to sync them. That's what we do. You may dislike that, and there's good reasons to dislike that. From a security perspective, it's the wrong way to do it, okay? I'm aware of that. And I will not move from that point away, because from a privacy perspective, it's exactly what we need to do it. Better they share too many keys between each other and the data creating is out than the other way around, right? That's from the privacy view, because why I founded that project was that we want to make it way more expensive for mass surveillance. And that gives the options, and you see there is questionable decisions because of that, because privacy and security don't always go together, right? That's how it is. But that one, for example, is something I don't think I want to change. By default, they encrypt. and it works on their devices, right? Okay, I think I'm already over time. So, I could go further and we're not completely through, but I hope you got an impression what we're doing there. And so far, are there any questions?
Why the fuck is this so fucking complicated?
Sorry?
Why the hell is this so complicated? Like, I mean, why is there like a 50s commit? Like, two-way handshake or whatever. I mean, why not just like make a damn password, like make use like let's log in the crypto box, just send an email to the crypto phone and on the other device you can enter the password. And the crypto will peace.
Okay. First, there is no reason why it's so complicated, which is based on there would not be technically no better options. I think this is one of the technically worst options you can choose. So that is obviously not the reason. I'm fully with you. There are way easier ways to do that, to achieve exactly the same goal, and those implementations are there and no one is using them. 7.5 billion users are not using it from 7.5001. Why?
I'm pretty sure like 7 billion are not using this either.
Let's see. Let's see.
Yeah, okay.
You know, we are trying to be an upgrade. We are basing on this following situation. We as the crypto community, and I feel as a member of that really in my heart, we are providing tools since more than 20 years. They don't use it. That's a fact. So I'm trying to analyze why not. And I tell you things, if you want to have my answer on that, my analysis result, what I think would be the reasons why they don't use it. If you have a hex code in, they will immediately reject it. With each button they need to press, you cut your user base in half. So if it's one button like with PEP, it will be 3.5 maximum. If it would be two buttons, it's always the half of that. If you make it all-inclusive 10 buttons, then you're not visible anymore.
Let's have a beer after that.
Okay. Okay.
I
love that offer, by the way. So it's really all what I can see is, if I read a manual how to generate a key, you know, I know after line 2 no one will do it.
Yeah, but for example, you have a really nice implementation of WhatsApp, and you could do it in an open source way that, well, if you want to share your laptop keys with your phone, right, you just like send an email, let's say it's an encrypted, like one older keys, one package encrypted, and whatever, your laptop displays a QR code with a private key to decrypt that the phone can scan it. In a pretty secure way that just doesn't need to get a network connected.
Show me a way how it can be for so easy for the user that he gets a window and the only thing he has to choose is yes or no. Because that's the result here.
I mean, this is not that it's easy, like, let's say, but WhatsApp does this. And like millions of
WhatsApp does not have my problem because it's a closed central platform.
Oh, but this is a very nice solution for key sharing. And well,
okay, next problem. I tell you something which is forbidden in the user interface of PEP. We have a list of words you may even not mention. Key. Encryption. Forbidden words don't appear in the user interface. Why not? If I even name them, I lose my user base.
Yeah, but in my implementation,
how many users using WhatsApp on
multiple
devices?
Many.
WhatsApp is being used.
No, on multiple devices. A lot of people have their phone and then they use it. Actually, WhatsApp doesn't do on the other device if your phone is running.
Yeah, of course.
Nobody's mentioned
about
that.
They don't know why the phone. Because nobody's using WhatsApp.
I'm just trying to frame you the problem how we see it.
Yeah,
and to explain why we opted for such a solution, the answer is, don't mention that keys even exist. don't mention that encryption exists. Show them if they can rely that this was a private message or not. For example, PEP is not signaling if the message was encrypted at all. PEP is signaling if the message, if you can rely as a user that this it was private. And of course you're using encryption to press that through. But if you get an encrypting message where our rating says you cannot rely on it, you don't get the signal. We don't differ for users between unencrypted and encrypted messages at all. So that is an approach we have. Of course you can dislike that one as well. There may be other approaches.
I really love that, and I agree with all the key stuff and the encryption. We should never mention the key to the user, but even on the back side we shouldn't have this super complicated protocol.
You know, the idea is that we just generate the network stack out of that, and then we make it accessible for example, synchronizing your contacts peer-to-peer, and synchronizing your schedule if you want. So you can have shared calendars over that. And then if you compare it to the other protocols which are doing that, it's not complex, I think. I know that's a little weird. We call that the PEP cloud, or the cloud 2.0, right? Not to have one. Because I think that's also in the interest of privacy that you don't need the cloud account, right? It's not needed. And that is where it's going to. So what you see here is the reason for distributed transaction is if you try to think through, you have already a group of devices and one extra device, and you want to be sure that one of the group accepts, which can do that for the group and the new device. Show me a solution which is easier than a distributed transaction for that one, and I will join.
Well, we need to get a peer, but
I'm fully agreeing on that point.
I don't want to die.
Fully agreeing on that point.
Two questions, in fact. One
yes.
is, how many round trip times do you need for a full group sync?
Round trips? Groups? Yeah, well, you know, we can read that in the messages, right? So, all in all, I have 14 messages.
Okay, so 7 round trips.
So this is beacon, negotiation request, open, and then I get an accept. Two times, because distributed transaction. And then, if I'm not a group, this thing is skipped. And then I get the keys. So how many was it?
Six,
I think. So it's six.
Second question, is any of this more complicated because you want to stick it into SMSs specifically?
Yes and no.
Where does size come into play?
Yes, let's say it's complex also because I need to have it abstracted. You know, I cannot rely, for example, on the properties of email. At the same time, I cannot rely on the properties of SMS. I cannot rely on anything that just messages get transported and that may be unreliable. SMS, for example, is unreliable, right? So yes, in this view, actually, I think if I could assume more about the message transport, maybe it would not be six, it would be four, for example. Yes, then I could combine probably I could send, for example, the keys already with accept and stuff like that.
I could imagine it could be even 9-3.
I'm not really sure.
I don't think so.
How can you send the key over SMS because keys are usually long?
That's a complex question. Actually, I need to explain then concepts of PEP. Mm-hmm. So, like key mapping, and we could have, for example, we have the possibility that we split it to many SMSs and combine mm-hmm. the key data. That's there. And it's also possible that we actually split the information which key can be trusted and just hold the key data, and it's coming later when you have better connection on a different channel that supports it. So it's depending on how we do it on that channel, and that's a fairly complex thing, by the way, again. So, but that's the topic, transport system of PEP. So that would be a own discussion, I think. But I'm still with the beer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The user has four or more devices and somehow ended up with two distinct groups. Can they join them?
No. Security reason. If we discuss that, if you join a group, you make the following attack vector possible. I, as an attacker, create a group between two devices and sell you one. And it's still grouped. If that device asks the stupid question, shall we join the groups? I found the second group. Then the user needs to read that text. So it's a type of phishing attack vector, right? If the user expects already that that beast will ask a trustworthy dialogue and just not read the text that this is not the same group, right, and accept, well, the secret keys goes to the other device, which is still with the attacker, right? So we opted against that feature intentionally and do things like for example, if your device was too long not in a group, it leaves the group, it just drops back to Seoul. We do it like this thing will just say nothing, and if you reboot sync by disable enable it, you know, that is probably what user will do, because I think Microsoft Windows teaches that, right? So if they're following common patterns, it will just rejoin the group, right? So we rejected merging intentionally because of security issues. I give you an example for actual problems at PEP so you can just colorize that. One big problem today we have with GMX is that if you send a mail from a PEP client to a GMX user, and the GMX user is using the web interface of GMX, that user cannot read the email of PEP. By the way, this email was unencrypted and they cannot read it anymore. Why? Because GMX had the great idea, you know, they are supporting PGP using that, how is the plugin named? I forgot the name. It's one of the open source plugins even, for PGP in a browser. And they now had the idea, they see that PEP could encrypt, the other guy has a PEP client, they see, wow, we could encrypt with them. And then they show a big window. You could encrypt with that guy, just you need to configure encryption here as well. And I have a user, that's an actual real case out of practice now. I have a user who is not good in seeing, you know, with his glasses. His glasses are fairly thick, so he does not use them at the screen, and so he made the font of his web browser fairly big. And so this user said to us that since his friend has PEP, he cannot read the emails anymore because the mail is still unencrypted, because he would need to scroll down, right? Because there is the unencrypted mail.
And that's not possible.
Oh, it's possible. Just that user does not understand the text.
Yeah. That's exactly why the code is so complicated.
Yes, that's why it's complex. The user does not understand the text. It's in German language, because it's a German provider, and the user is German native speaker.
Yeah.
And on that thing is standing, I say it in English, the partner you got the message from is able to encrypt. We could be able as well. If you want to encrypt, you can press install here, install the plugin, and then you can answer encrypted. But he does not understand that text. For him, he took it as, well, the message is encrypted, I cannot read it. I don't know about encryption, fuck, they must be geeks. service call, I cannot read your message. I cannot read that message here, and that's my friend, it's important, I need to read it. And all what this user would need to do is scroll. It's an unencrypted one. And so that is the real world, you know? And that is why the word encryption is forbidden in user interface, right? It's not appearing, and the word key is either.
Then why just not simply forbid the word PGP in whatever you send in, whatever you see?
If I would recommend that, you know, the PGP guys would even dislike me more. right? I should not do that. It's not all of them. Some are just great and we are friends, and there's a small group who dislike me, okay? And by the way, PEP is not PGP.
So HTML is sent in the body of email. Why don't you just hide the encrypted content?
Sorry?
Why don't you use CSS in the email to hide encrypted content?
Ever heard of eFail and colleagues?
Do you ever find half emails?
With that question, I just comment on it. You open Pandora's box with that question, right?
Right.
You open Pandora's box. By the way, no PEP client ever was weak against eFail, because we took out both attack vectors they combined, we took out by design. I can show that, but that is something I would even require a beer for that, okay?
No, but eFail was a pure design mistake of S-MIME. It's not even PGP, the S-MIME, right?
We don't know, you know, we have an own design and we try to be compatible to the two of them.
I mean, eFail basically is a common mistake in cryptography, which is taught everywhere. Just if you receive garbage, don't display it. It's as simple as that. Garbage.
I fully agree with that one. I fully agree with that one. That's exactly what we do. If it's garbage, don't display it. I fully agree with that.
Don't even decode it.
Yes. Fully agreed on that one.
That's it.
On the same page.
Poor mistake there.
Okay. Any other questions? Or beer?
Beer.
Okay, thank you very much.